is a lady familiar to us all through her many, many avenues of service. Currently, she is the president of the Cavalarian Women's Club. You'll frequently see her on stage at entertainment evenings where she participates in choral expression. She has given probably most of the classes that we offer from life analysis training on up. And anytime there's a job to be done, if you look out in an audience for the first hand to go up, you'll probably see the hand of, please welcome, Monica Daniel.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, I've picked the topic of truth should be the basis of education. We can look back on our 12-plus years in school and ask ourselves if our education has truly prepared us for life, for a successful life. If we discuss this with our friends and family, they might have a lot of suggestions of extra courses that we could take and integrate into the educational system. They would say, you know, we could be better prepared for life if they taught more practical things like learning financial planning and how to budget our money, how the banking system works and what interest rates are and how they impact us when we use our credit cards, how the stock market works and how to properly invest in it. How about how to prepare a tax return? Learning about the physical body, how each part of the body works, what its function is, and how to keep our body healthy. Learning about food and the effects of junk food, sugar, and fat on our body. And we're actually seeing this in the educational system right now where they're thinking of taking out a lot of the vending machines in primary schools because they're finding that the children are becoming too hyper with all the different soft drinks and candies that are available. Also, the suggestion might be, how about learning about tension and how to stay relaxed in the world that we're living in today? Another one that I'm sure there are some classes on it, but it's learning about the aging process, preparing ourselves physically, mentally, and financially, recognizing that the body ages, but the mind is ageless. The list really could go on and on. A further education, including these subjects and many more, could better prepare us to enjoy a fuller life in a more practical way. But really, we're jumping ahead here. First of all, we have to understand the basis of education. From Webster's Dictionary of 1960, to educate means to bring up a child, to develop and cultivate mentally or morally, calling for a systematic instruction. Education is described as a discipline of mind or character through study or instruction, a science dealing with the principles and practice of teaching and learning. Then we come to the Internet's Wikipedia. In its broadest sense, education is any act or experience that has a formative effect on the mind, character, or physical ability of an individual. In its technical sense, education is a process by which society deliberately transmits its accumulated knowledge, values, and skills from one generation to another through institutions. So when we think about the basis of education, it is going to be determined by what has been taught by our parents and teachers down through the ages and passed on to us. What if the basis of the education we have received is not firmly grounded in principles based on truth? The more basic subjects like mathematics, language, and literature are grounded in basic principles, but what about the rest of the subjects that we learn in school? What are they based on? Many of us have learned about the inaccuracies we've been taught as we go through our experiences in life. We have had to re-educate ourselves so that our understanding is logical and based on something closer related to the truth. In Mr. Parker's writings, he states, our educational system tells children facts. That is, makes statements about life upon a myriad of subjects without explaining basic reasons or proper meanings for the statements. The children are supposed to accept them without question and depend largely upon memory for success in their schooling. Everything must have a basis or foundation upon which to build constructively, particularly learning or education. One cannot accept a statement to get anything out of it if it is not based on logic and reason. Education should be based on logic and reason. It should be based on the truths of life. Textbooks are going to have their own slant on certain historic events, each one attesting to be the truth, each one attesting to be fact, but is it the truth? If we were to look at textbooks down in America on the American Revolution and one in Iran and one in Australia and one in Canada, all on the same subject, I wonder if they would all show the American Revolution the same, or else if they're all going to have their own understanding of what happened during the American Revolution. So it's just a thought there. Really, it is opinion based on a perspective that is passed down one generation to another. So what are the truths of life? Where do we find these truths in life? The laws of life should be universal. They apply to all, regardless of one's religion, culture, upbringing, or education. A truth of life is consistent and conforms to fact and reality. It is not man-made and cannot be changed by opinion. Some of the truths or laws of life are: to create a foundation in education, we must first understand what our purpose is so that education is taking us on the right direction. As was mentioned, everything must have a basis or foundation upon which to build constructively. So, again, what are some of the truths in life? What is our purpose? Why are we here? Why is education so important to us? Before we can even map our education, we have to understand who we are, how we relate to life, how to measure who we are, and what our purpose is in life. And it's interesting because when we listen to children, they ask those questions. Is there a God? Who is God's mummy? What am I here for? Why does that person do that? Why is there a person that's sick over here and a person that's not sick over there? And what is the reason for that? So children are always asking questions. Their minds are searching. We are here to be the conscious part of life. That is our purpose in life. It's to be the eyes, ears, and mouthpiece of that God power in life, to be the intelligent expression and bring beauty and harmony into life, to be the stewards of the earth, to allow the expression of the power within us. Is there a God? We teach in the philosophy that we don't personalize God. We recognize God as a principle, not a personality. We say we believe in God, the principle. And we symbolize it as the circle with no beginning and no end. It is universal, and it encompasses all. Everything is part of God, the principle, and it has its particular purpose in life. The flowers, the animals, everything we see in life is part of God, the principle. We don't put anything outside of God, the principle. We recognize that there is a law of duality. We recognize the principle of opposites, the higher and the lower, that there is an abstract and a finite plane. We recognize, and we see this in life with the seed in the ground. We take that seed out and we look at it, and it's a physical, finite object. But inside, there's something very powerful in that seed. If we were to split it and open it up and look in it, we can't see a picture of what that seed is going to be. We just know that there is a power in that seed. And that is the abstract part of life. And it's not recognized in life today or not measured. And that's one of the most basic parts. It should be one of the most basic parts of our education. Because our education has to start from a basic principle and move forward. But if we are starting from a lot of inaccuracies, how are we going to first fulfill our purpose? Because that is the most important education that we can have. The other parts of education are important, and we'll get to those. So we do recognize that law of duality. And a lot of these things that I'm talking about, of course, are available in one of the courses we teach in Kabbalah and Philosophy, I got a mental blank here. Everyone knows what that course is. What is it? Life analysis training. Thank you. So much for the blank. Thank you. That's what our friends are here for, to help us. We also recognize the law of involution and evolution, the law of growth. From the abstract to the finite, we call this process the process of involution and evolution. We become involved in life, in our first breath of life. We become connected to life, and we evolve through life. We are meant to be, as was mentioned, the eyes, ears, and mouthpiece of God, the principle. So we become involved in life, and through the principles, through the education that we receive, we are to evolve through life and be a success in life. We see this power working as we study life. We see this power all around us. We see the seasons coming and going and changing. We see the power in the seeds. We plant a seed in the ground at the right time, and we see a flower blooming within the course of just, in some cases, depending on the plant cycle, in just a few weeks, we can see such a huge change. We also recognize, we see this power as we study life, too, not only in the plant kingdom, but in the animal kingdom, in all of life. And that understanding that principle is a very important basis of our education. We start with a water molecule at the very basis of life. We go through the plant kingdom, the insects, the birds, and then we come to the animal kingdom, right up to humankind. The higher we go up the scale of this finite expression, the more intelligent the expression. So is humankind different? Are we different than the rest of species in life? Why is it that we need an education? Do we see beavers sitting around to the mother beaver teacher teaching it how to be a beaver? No, we don't. There isn't any school for beavers, because beavers or any other animal, because they live by a different law than humankind. They live by the instinctive law. They just do things automatically, naturally. But humankind is different. And the reason that we are different is because we have a mind. The animal kingdom live under the instinctive law. We are conscious. We have a mind, can think, and we can make choices. We also have a different set of laws to live by. What are these laws that humankind lives by? They are the conscious laws of life. We call them in the philosophy the five basic truths: mathematics, language, name, mind, and consciousness. The first law is mathematics. This is not the same mathematics that we learn in grade one. We learn the ABCs, and we learn how to form letters, words, sentences, paragraphs, and we learn to read and write. This is not the same sort of the ABCs relative to life. It's not the same. We measure the qualitative side of mathematics, not the quantitative side. We recognize there's a duality in this expression. The qualitative side of mathematics is the way that we measure human nature. And the way that we do that is we measure mathematics relative to language. So when we're learning our ABCs, that's the important part in life, because we do have to learn how to read and write, because our intelligence is expressed through the language that we express. If we have a limited vocabulary, or we don't know how to read, or we don't know how to write, then our intelligence is limited as a result of that. So that qualitative side of mathematics is missing in our education today. And it is a means through which we can measure human nature. What are we measuring here? How do we use mathematics and language to measure human nature? We measure the inner potential of an individual. We measure the reason that they're here. We measure the reason for being for all of us. This is measured by the month, day, and year a person was born. It is the day we took our first breath of life and the day that we linked ourselves to the finite, to this physical world. And it is a most precious link to life, and so it is a very important time. We allow the potential to express by harmonizing the inner with the outer to allow a clear, pure channel for that inner potential. What is the outer expression? We talked about this inner expression. We understand how to measure it. Again, we're not going to go in depth with regards to the life analysis training course, but we just want to touch on these basic principles. The outer expression is the mind, and it is determined by language. Language individualized by one's name. So it is the name that can be measured by the alphabetical symbols of the letters, and it is the name that one is given that we measure. These universal principles of life should be the basis of education from our parents and our schools. When we're talking about education here, we're not only talking about the institutions that we go to from grade 1 to 12, you know, all of those years that we go to school. We're also talking about the basic education that we receive from our parents. But remember that our parents can only teach us what they've been taught. They can only teach us what they've learned down through the years and what they've learned through their own analysis and their own experiences. I talked to a person one time, and they wanted to have a family and a number of children. And they were a person that was not a foster child, but their mother and father had passed away when they were 3 years of age. And they were brought up by aunts and relatives. And I asked this person, well, you know, why do you want to have children? He said, well, I want to have a family. I want to bring, you know, youngsters into the world. And I said, well, what sort of rules and regulations are you going to use to sort of bring up these children? You've never had any experience yourself. And they looked at me and they said, well, really, education is just common sense. And I thought, isn't that interesting that a person would draw from their experiences, and so that education of those children would be very different from an education from someone who has had a parent that has possibly grown up in the educational system and had children and had parents that nurtured them and taught them different things and so forth. So note the difference is going to be quite obvious. But when we think about it, is logic and reason common sense? So it all depends on what the measuring stick is. It has to be based on the truth. It has to be based on the truth of life, those universal principles that we recognize as being for everybody. Everyone will respond to those universal truths. It's not partiality and it's not opinion. So with these understandings, with this understanding of the principles, we can start our education and understanding of who we are and what our purpose is. Yes, a child definitely needs to learn to read and write and be able to, because that is the way we are able to think. So that education in language is very important. We go back to the three R's, reading, writing, and I think it was arithmetic without the A. And that has always been the basis of a good education, along with the refinements of proper punctuation, diction, and inflection. But again, if we do not have the basis of understanding of what our purpose is, sometimes we can go off on a different, you could say, bent or road relative to the expression of our inner potential. So that has to come first, the understanding of our inner potential and the balance of the inner potential to the name or the outer expression. Literature is also important in this education, and mathematics, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, and all the subjects that are based in logic and reason are positive subjects that we can learn a great deal from and that can help us further. I remember even in school taking something like typing and office practices and how practical that was, and I thought, now this is something we can all really use, and now with the computers, you know, a lot of executives that are in positions that they're in and need to use a computer now have to go and take a typing course so that they can use the keyboard, or else they learn where the letters are and it's like this. So, you know, those practical subjects are still very important, and we can gain a great deal from them. And they're part of an education, you know, as we build step by step constructively, one step at a time. All of these subjects and more would be part of a child's study, of a child's studies as a recognition for logic and reason, because they are the basis of education. We all know as well that school and education don't stop after we graduate grade 12. Really, our education has just begun, because we continue to learn through the experiences we attract and the challenges we face. Because what is life about but that surge within humankind to find it, his or her place in life and to fulfill their purpose? So surely we can further our education by taking courses relative to our chosen profession. That's important too. If a person wants to go into a particular profession and learn about accounting or insurance, or even in the trades, electrician, plumbing, roofing, all of that education is important, but the foundation of our education has to be for that individual to be allowed to fulfill their purpose. Because when we're able to fulfill our purpose, we're able to bring in that happiness factor in our lives. Our happiness can be guaranteed if we understand what our purpose is and we are willing to follow the principles in life that are laid out for us. So it is the fulfillment of that inner potential that is very important. Many years ago, Mr. Shearing likened it to a tourist here on Earth, and we are the tour guide. He said that, you know, really, when you think of it, our life here is very short and very temporary. But that doesn't mean that we can't accomplish a great deal and also fulfill our purpose in life and also add to life, because all of us are needed. All of us have a certain expression in life that is needed for the whole. And he said it's like you have this tourist, you have someone who comes from out of town, someone who comes from the you could say conscious power in life, and we are the guide for that conscious power for the amount of time that we are here in life. So where are we going to take this tourist? What are we going to show them? We're going to show them the most beautiful parts. We should be wanting to show them the most beautiful parts of life, the most beautiful parts of the city. We take them to Stanley Park, we take them down to the harbor. We'd show them the good part of the harbor. We'd show them, you know, the cruise ships. We'd go to nice restaurants. We would tour the aquarium. We would go to all the beautiful things that are uplifting for us and uplifting for them, and we would show them Vancouver like they've never seen Vancouver before. And in so doing, that spark of life that is within us is having a beautiful experience here in life. That spark of life is experiencing the fullest that it can. But, you know, we have to make sure that we are going down the right path. You know, if we're taking that guide, if we're taking that tourist and we don't know the directions and we're turning left when we should turn right and we end up in, you know, places that we don't want to be, then it's sort of like, okay, well, I've got to get back on track here. This is not where I want to be. This is sort of, you know, I didn't know that this was what was going to go on down this road. So then we have to turn ourselves around and get back on track and recognize that, you know, I've got to get the map out. I've got to get use my GPS if we have one of those. I've got to find out how I get back on track here. So we go back again to those basic principles or basic truths of life to get ourselves back on track. Because that is the way that we are going to have the fullest life, is to keep ourselves close to those truths. But it's interesting because in life today, we see that life is a competition for a lot of us because that's the way we've been educated. We see it in the entertainment field. There's the world's best model or the top model or the, you know, the, the American Idol or the best entertainment here and the Olympics. And so there's all of this competition going in life, and it's like we're competing against one another. And that is such an opposite concept from a universal principle. We are meant to assist and work with each other and bring out the higher side of each other. We are meant to use the principles that we've been taught in this philosophy and share them with others and allow our inner potential to express like it has never expressed before. And we can do that by keeping ourselves to the truth of life, keeping ourselves close to the truth of life. It's interesting how when we do go down a road and all of a sudden it branches out, for that period of time that it starts to branch out, it's almost parallel to the road that we're on. But when it starts branching out, you notice it doesn't go like this. It goes ever so slowly. So here we are, here's where we want to be, and here's where we're slowly going. And we don't realize that possibly we could be going off a little bit. And it's not until we compare to that truth again that we realize, gosh, you know, that side street is really quite a ways away. And usually we don't find out until we're way over here. And all of us have experienced that. All of us have been in a situation where we've had an experience or something has happened, and we say to ourselves, gosh, how did I get here? I didn't realize I was so far off, but it happened so gradually. And then here we have this marvelous principle of life that we can measure ourselves to. Not measuring ourselves or competing with other people, not trying to say, well, you know, yes, it's positive to say I'd like to be kind like that person, or else I'd like to be happy like that person, or else I'd like to be natural like that person, and gosh, I wish I had a better business head. This person seems so much more business-like. It's wonderful to be able to draw from positive examples around us, but at the same time, we have to remember where we've come from, what we're trying to accomplish, and work on our, you could say, opportunities a little bit at a time. But it's nice to have those examples. So we have to recognize that we're subject to this whole world of competition that's around us. It is massive, this you could say, plane of mind of competition. And it is so deadly to someone who wants to fulfill their purpose, wants to fulfill their spiritual purpose, because when we look at success in life, success is determined by if a person is famous, if a person is, for the most part, not in all of life, but for the most part, if a person is famous, if a person is in the news, if they're rich, you know, how much money they make, and they have this splashed on, you know, different magazines, you know, the people with the top salaries for this past year, and it's hard to fathom people are making millions and millions of dollars, but we've also realized where that's come from, and we've also realized that, you know, some of that is being deterred right now because of the economic situation, but still, these are the things that that a lot of people measure life by, and here we are trying to fulfill our purpose, trying to keep ourselves close to the truths of life, and we have to recognize that success in life is determined by our inner potential expressing to the highest that it can. And it's not an end result. It's a journey. And it's continual. And we draw from different experiences in life and we gain, you could say, inspiration in our successes along the way, the success of being able to control our temper, having the success being able to, if we've have a moody nature, being able to control our moods and not react in the way that we've always reacted. We reacted that way right through our formative years. Our parents weren't educated, didn't understand. They allowed us to go through temper tantrums. They allowed us to get away with things, whatever direction we're coming from. And so now we have to educate ourselves. And you know, when we can control when we can control something that has up to this point of time been a challenge for us, we've just won $1 million. That's the way that we should look at it. We have just really hit the jackpot, because that fulfillment within ourselves, overcoming something that we've had for long, a weakness that we've had for a long time, is like hitting the jackpot. So those changes that we make are one of the hardest things that we can do as an adult student in life. We draw from our education, but you know, the roads get deep, the ruts get deep, but at the same time, we go back to educating ourselves with the truths of life, and answers are all there for us. The retraining process in life is similar to the process in life that a child takes. A child asks lots of questions, you know, why? So we have to ask ourselves, you know, why am I here? Where do I really want to go? You know, that self-talk that they talk about, you know, asking ourselves questions, gauging ourselves from where we want to be to where we are now to where we want to be. So we recognize that challenges represent opportunities. They represent the opportunity for us to see where we would like to go. So we can continue our education using those basic tools. Whether we are a newer student or have learned the basics long gone and now are continuing, we just have to keep practicing using those basic truths in life. One of the ways that we can bring out the higher side of our nature is to draw or incorporate the positive qualities of all the numbers from 1 to 9. It doesn't matter what our inner potential is. It's very important that we learn to express all the positive qualities from 1 to 9, because those are universal qualities. And then once we learn how to use these different qualities, we can draw from them at will. They can be a part of us, so that when we need individuality, when we need independence, when we find ourselves being affected or not quite ourselves in an environment, we can draw from that individuality of the one and allow and give ourselves that boost and say, you know, this is where I have to draw from this. This is an environment I'm in. I'm not quite sure, you know, if this is right or not, but if I'm individual and I can handle it and have the confidence, because that's a universal quality. That's a basic truth in life that we can draw from. If we're in a position where tact and diplomacy is needed, we can't say to ourselves, well, I'm not a two quality, or I don't have the two in my makeup. We can incorporate the two in our makeup and be as tactful and diplomatic as any person that it's natural to. If we recognize that that's the truth of life, and we just allow the tact and diplomacy, we tune into that, and we allow that to express through us. Someone needs a helping hand. Someone needs encouragement. Someone just needs that ear for so that they can talk and you can be a good listener. So then we have the three quality, the happy, generous, outgoing, and giving quality, and sometimes we really need that. Challenges and different things happen in our life, and we say to ourselves, you know, I've just got to sing, I've just got to be happy, I've just got to, you know, just allow myself to lift myself up above whatever is going on and just be happy. And, you know, we can draw from that quality. We recognize the cycles, we go through the different cycles from 1 to 9. We can draw from the cycles and if we're in a three-cycle year, a three-cycle month, a three-cycle day, we can draw from that three quality and we can remember it and incorporate it into our makeup so that when we need it, again, it's there for us. The practical, analytical, and intellectual quality of the four, that system and order, is so necessary in life to get ahead in any area of endeavor. So sometimes I have to just tell you this story. There is a gal at work, and she's very strong in the threes. And she's the manager of the agency that I work in. And she has so many responsibilities. She's in charge of so many people, and the owner keeps loading more stuff on because she has a lot of sixes in her makeup, which is a very responsible quality. So here she is. I can see her bustling in with big loads of paperwork from different offices, and she's got this to do and that to do. And I said to her, how do you handle it, Diane? She goes, you know, Monica, I've just learned that I can only do one thing at a time. And so she's a visual person. She said, I take everything that's on my desk and I put it in piles all over the floor. She goes, no one can come into my office because they're all over the floor. And she goes, I just tackle one thing at a time because that's the only way I can keep my sanity and I can get anything accomplished. And I thought, isn't it interesting that here this very three-ish expressive person, and she is very expressive, is able to draw from something that allows her to maintain what she calls her sanity, to be able to do her job well. And she is drawing from that quality of truth, of system and order. And as was mentioned, it's needed for, we all need that. Another quality that is the fifth quality, the investigative, promotional, and versatile and changeable quality. And again, this is a quality that we can draw from when there is a need to think about things in a different way, to maybe recognize that we have been doing things the same way. Let's try something different. Let's look into things a little bit more. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Try to analyze things and not to the nth degree, and I don't mean drawing from the negative side of a quality, but bringing out the positive quality, that ambitious, quick-thinking in quality of the five. And sometimes we have to think on our feet, and that's where we can draw from the five quality. Then we have the responsible, reliable, and dependable quality of the six. And it's a wonderful quality for stability, of course, and we can draw from that when we do see a lot of things going on around us that are rather hard to handle and difficult to find what the right answer is. We can draw from that responsible quality, or we see other people that are having challenges, we can go and assist them, and we can draw from that responsible, reliable quality of the six. The seventh quality is the placid, calm, and theoretical quality, and we can draw from that at will, especially when we're out in nature. But sometimes when we've had quite a harrowing day, it's nice to sit in our office and just think of a peaceful scene and create calmness and relaxation and peace in our life. It can be a picture that can take us there, but it's our thinking that will keep us there. It's the thinking of that peaceful quality of the seven. The eight quality is justice, the fairness, the equality, the executive quality, and it is that even-tempered quality. And we all know that with many different qualities that we have to deal with around us, friends, family, co-workers, upset clients, and so forth, that even quality of the eight can actually assist another person in seeing reason and by being calm and by being even and being strong, but still being even, and we can draw out the higher side of another person. And, of course, there's the idealism, intuitive, dramatic, and visionary quality of the nine. And, again, it is a quality that all of us, it's one of those truths in life that we all can incorporate into our nature because it is a spiritual quality, just like all of the qualities from 1 to 9, all the things that we've discussed here are all spiritual qualities, all truths of life that we can incorporate into our makeup and use at will when you recognize that someone needs some understanding or needs to see the larger picture in life. We can draw from that 9 quality and give them a little bit, lift the perspective from here up to here and give them a little bit broader perspective to assist them on their way, to make them realize maybe they've just been looking, at one aspect, and we can show them the little bit larger picture there. So there is another part to Mr. Parker's quotation on education. And the part, I read this part, but I'm just going to read this last part. It says, He says, everything must have a basis or foundation upon which to build constructively, particularly learning and education. One cannot accept a statement and get anything out of it if it is not based upon logic and reason. And the reason that we can't get anything out of statements that are not based on logic and reason is because within ourselves there is a power of life that wants the answers, wants the truth. And we are looking for logic and reason. We are looking for things to make sense. We are looking for things to be step by step, to be built constructively one step at a time. And he goes on to say, where there is no logic, there cannot be initiative. For initiative without logic is merely restless confusion. And we have to ask ourselves, what do we see around us today? Where there is no logic, there is no initiative, and we do see that restless confusion. So let's continue to base our education, our growth, on logic and reason. We can create a very strong plane of mind out in the world today that others can draw from just by our example. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Monica. Just to round out our philosophical program for this morning, we have a very, very short sound bite for you on the topic of optimism.
Optimism. What part does it play in creating, maintaining a happy mind? What role does it play in mental growth and stability? Can optimism interfere with people seeing the reality of life or not facing the realities of life? Optimism is that first form of expression of the attractive force. If you're not optimistic, how can you attract something better? You say, well, that's not being realistic. You've got to see that the results here. Look, we owe all this much money. We have only got this much money. We're broke. And so someone says, well, all right. Tomorrow's another day. We'll find some money. You say, no, well, which mind is going to attract something? They'll both attract something, but only the optimistic one will attract something better. Now, maybe they won't find anything better tomorrow, because it doesn't mean to say that just because they're optimistic, it's going to happen. There are many factors involved. But the point I want to make is that optimism is the seed of the future. Optimism is like the nine qualities. And when the one comes around, the vision or the seed of the nine is seeded into the one to start things going. And so we should always be optimistic over the future. What does it play in creating a happy mind? Well, my goodness, I think everyone is happier thinking of something better than thinking of something worse. When you think of something worse, it's depressing. When you think of something better, it's encouraging, it's inspiring, and it's hopeful. And so that is how one's mind can help create the future, by having this optimism regarding what one wants to bring about in the future. And stability, well, it gives a foundation. Optimism is like an anchor. It helps you to stay, you might say, stable, whereas pessimism we're never going to get out of this hole. It's only going to drag you down, and it's like a big wind dragging the boat, even though it's got its anchor out, it just drags it on its anchor. Well, optimism is a stronger anchor, if you like, to help you withstand the buffeting of challenges because you've got some hope that's based on your optimism. Can optimism interfere with people seeing the reality of life or not facing the realities of life? Well, that's not optimism. That is misconcept. Optimism is seeing and wishing for the positive potential. It doesn't mean that one has to be illogical or unrealistic. It means that one has to take the circumstances and elevate them to a better level. Now, whatever the realities are, they're going to change, and you can change them, hopefully, with your the creativity of your mind. So everyone should be optimistic. If you don't believe in yourself, how can you look at the future if you don't think, well, I can do that, I can do it better. I'm learning, etc. Just see a better, happier future. How important is it to maintain optimism when all around you the world is losing theirs? Well, the others don't have the principle, and you do. It is very important, very, very important to maintain the optimism throughout all of life, even under the last breath.
Humbleness is one of the...
So the final word for the season is to remain optimistic. Some announcements for us all. Looking at the calendar, first of all, next Sunday evening is the final senior philosophy class of the season, which is also the closing of our Principles in Action review, and there will be a special tea afterwards with some entertainment. Then, on the Saturday the 20th, the Caballerian Women's Club has a closing event out at the Richmond Inn, and as you know, Monica's here today, so you can make your reservations with her if you have not done so. The following day, Sunday the 21st, the men have their golf tournament at Mylora, and I'm very sure that there are at least a couple of people. I see Croft Rowland here, and check with the men if you'd like to reserve and haven't done so. Then July, of course, we have no scheduled classes, but there are meetings for the Women's Club on the 2nd and the Men's Club on the 9th. And I see that on the 18th of July, Saturday here, there will be a luau put on by the Caballerian Women's Club with entertainment. And that will take us into August. We don't have the calendar here for that yet. Now, a couple of announcements regarding the morning classes. First of all, a little reminder that if you have a brilliant idea over the summer for a topic or a question that you'd like to have discussed, you can send an email to talktopic@caballerians.com, and we'll make every effort to have one of the classes deal with your idea or topic. You can all smell the delicious aromas of the brunch that we're going to enjoy in a few moments. And I went downstairs briefly, and it was like an explosion of color. They've set up the tables, and it's the virtual experience that our listening audience is enjoying just simply cannot give you the sensation that you'll get when you walk downstairs holding a plate of Julie's delicious food and enjoy the decorations that she's prepared for us. And, of course, after that, we have the annual general meeting for the voting members of the society. So it's a full day. Now, just before we close, we thought it would be fun to have a little project for the summer, a little idea to share. The purpose is basically to encourage all of us to get into our books and study through the holiday.
because study generates discussion, and discussion sometimes generates questions, which can be forwarded to the teleconferences. And study and discussion always promote personal and collective growth. So for fun, we are suggesting a study challenge for the summer of 2009. And it will have a service component. First, we thought it might be fun to have a competition, but the problem with that is that you can get into a competitive spirit without actually getting the benefit of the study. And so the original idea has sort of changed. But we thought that if students were inspired to go through one book or one series of books, and as they did their study, their reading, to record page references for the key topics, then at the end of the summer we could collect and organize those and share them. Have you ever been asked to participate in a panel or give a talk on a given subject and you know that you have a wealth of material to you but you're short of time to prepare and you would just love to be able to go to an index and say, if the topic is, for instance, prana, where can I go to get a wide variety of material to kind of stimulate my own thinking before I hone in on the specific question? So I thought we could all work on that together. And obviously it's strictly by volunteer participation. But if you are inspired to participate, you can either keep track and send an email to talktopic@cavalarians.com before the end of the summer. Or if you prefer the pen and paper method, I still do. I actually have some pages at the back there. Harrison's holding them up, and he'll put them on that table for us. And you can just take a form and photocopy it as many times as you want. And it just suggests that we keep track of the keyword and the book and page references that we come across. Now, we could get really organized if we wanted to and say that Vancouver Group is going to do Philosophy 5 and all the Prairies are going to do Philosophy 4 and so on and so forth, but that seems a little bit prescriptive and it might limit your sense of freedom to move in whichever direction you want. But if you just keep track of whichever books you happen to be studying, then we can see where the gaps are and fill them in later. And so if you will submit anything that you have put together by the end of August, then I will volunteer to use the first week of September to at least get a preliminary sort of organization, and we'll share whatever we've gathered. And it may not cover all the books, but that's fine. It would be a start. And it would be something that we can benefit from, not only as participants in the study program, but as potential speakers now and in the future, and for all the students of the future as well. Because the more that we can find ways to access the material efficiently, the more that we will all have tools at our disposal for whatever study purposes we may have in the future. And if you're thinking, well, what kind of keywords? Well, as a suggestion, we might use words from the book Terms and Definitions. There are certain keywords that we all know. Principle, for example, or prana, for example, or involution, evolution, or reason. I mean, those are words that we use in every talk, in every class, and so the more references that we have, the better. But there will be others that you'll encounter as you're studying, and there's no limit on how many we can use, although I think we should probably limit it mostly to nouns, because we don't really need a reference to every adjective that Mr. Parker ever wrote. But I'm thinking of suggesting that we stick basically to the published materials of Alfred J. Parker, and that would kind of give a scope, define a scope, but would give us a lot of individual flexibility. So I hope that some of you are inspired to participate and that you will share the fruits of your efforts, and you can hand things to me personally whenever you happen to see me, or you can forward everything through Cavalarian, to the office, actually, just drop things off, or send them by email to talktopic@cavalarians.com. And before we do our closing song, I would like to have a special thank you for Justice Tyler, who has most kindly given us his support as pianist through this year when our dear Jeremy Ryan has been on a sabbatical. We're delighted to have her with us today. And also to Ross Tanner, who's been backstage, invisible, and working hard every single class. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Justice. And now to finish, please turn to page 16, What a Wonderful World. Monica, would you join me?